Avos Perek Hey Mishnah Hey 5:5, and here we have Asara Nisim Naasu Avosenu BeBeis HaMikdash. The following 10 miracles happened during the Beis HaMikdash's time. It's a machlokas if we're talking about just in the first Beis HaMikdash or also in the second Beis HaMikdash. And these miracles are miracles that don't just reflect Hashem's presence in being there, of which there were many miracles actually, but these are all miracles that were done essentially for the benefit of people, serving the Beis HaMikdash or visiting the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore it's worthy of note for us. I think the takeaway message of this Mishnah isn't there's something to do per se, it's not halachic, and certainly this didn't come from Har Sinai. This is talking about in retrospect what happened, but therefore we're looking at what Hashem essentially has done for us, and Hakar Satov, and doing miracles, if you will, for our benefit, is certainly something that's worth memorializing and remembering, and certainly we look forward, Bezrat Hashem, to the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash by Shlishi, where Bezrat Hashem, once again, we will merit to have these miracles done for us. So here are these 10 miracles. The first, says the Mishnah, is Lo hipila isha mereach basar hakodesh. A pregnant woman never miscarried from the smell of the roasting sacrificial meat. The idea here is that Chazal understood that a woman who is pregnant, if she has an urge to eat food, a particular type of food, that's serious business, indicates she has a true need for it. And the lacha reflects that, and therefore a woman is essentially allowed to eat what she's craving. The problem is that sacrificial meat is restricted for consumption. A typical woman can't eat it if it's, you know, if it's not hers, or she's not a, you know, she's not a Kohen and the like, so she can't necessarily eat it. And therefore, we'd be set up with sort of an unfortunate situation where a woman who's pregnant is desperate for a particular, she smells the food of the roasting in the Beis HaMikdash precincts, she craves that meat, we can't give it to her, and that would potentially risk her having a miscarriage, risk her child. But it never happened. Just speaking out, hypothetically, if it would have happened, meaning if she would have had this craving and she couldn't be calmed down, the lach would be, of course, because of pekuach nefesh, she would be allowed to eat of the sacrificial meat, because we don't have, you know, we don't endanger lives for such things, so it would be permitted, but it never came to that. Second of all, v'lhisriach b'sar ha-kodesh me'olam. It never happened that the sacrificial meat spoiled. Now, this really refers to, like, sort of, there's 2A and 2B. We're talking about 2A would be the meat that's sitting to be going on and burned on the outside altar there in the Beis HaMikdash. So it could happen, for example, let's say on a Friday afternoon, you have meat that you can't burn on Shabbos. It wasn't burned before Shabbos. You have to sit there on top of the altar, wait till after Shabbos to get burned. And that would make potentially for it to go rotten and smell, but it never happened. Similarly, you know, you people have people eating sacrificial meat. Let's say a shlam. A shlam lasts for 2 days. So in other words, if today is Monday morning, if you would bring your shlam in right now, you could then eat the meat the whole rest of today and tonight and tomorrow until Tuesday evening at Shkia. So that could be, I don't know what, in the summertime, that could be, you know, 30-odd hours. And in the summertime in your shlam, it could be very hot. So if you have meat without refrigeration for 30 hours, it could be, you know, spoiling. But the Mishnah says it never happened. Again, a miracle for the benefit of the people to not have to, you know, deal with smelling or rotten meat. Third of all, v'lo nira zvuv beveset mitbachaim. A fly was never seen in the butchering area of the Beis HaMikdash. So if you look at a map of the Beis HaMikdash, you see that there is a section there for the essentially the butchering of the animals. You have to sort of, you have to flay them, you have to clean out their intestines in case they have, you know, food inside there. And you have to, you know, there's blood and everything else. It's a butcher, like a butchery. So it's outdoors. And there, of course, you would suspect that that could attract flies. And that would be very unpleasant in terms of having to work under such conditions with lots of flies if you were the Cohen working as the butcher. But it never happened. Miraculously, there were never flies there in the butchery area, which made working in the basement b'chaim there for the Cohen much more pleasant. Fourth of all, v'lo eira keri la Kohen Gadol b'Yom HaKippurim. A Kohen Gadol was never invalidated from serving as Kohen Gadol on the morning of Yom Kippur because of a seminal emission. Now, the truth is the Talmud talks about other scenarios where the Kohen Gadol didn't end up becoming invalidated and puzzled from serving. But the point is that having a seminal emission would be embarrassing for the Kohen Gadol, and therefore he was prevented from that embarrassment by not ever having it happen. You'll note if you learn Maseches Yoma that there was a great deal of effort put in to make sure that the Kohen Gadol shouldn't get that. So they wouldn't let him, you know, they wouldn't even let him sleep at night, and they wouldn't let him eat the foods that would bring on this kind of thing, etc. And they put in contingencies in case, you know, there's the stand-up, the standby, you know, replacement kohen in case it did happen. But that was all because of the rule of Ein Somchin al Anes. You're not allowed to rely on a miracle. We don't just assume Hashem will continue to do these miracles for us, and therefore they had all these, you know, safeguards in place, but ultimately it just never happened, and therefore that was another chesed of Hashem protecting the, you know, the dignity, if you will, of the Kohen Gadol and all of us who are connected to him. Next you have V'lo chibu geshamim eish shel atzei hamaracha. The fire, the rain never extinguished the fire that was burning on the pyre of the wood on the outer altar. Outer altar, of course, is open to the sky. When it rains on the outer altar. It's got wood there, it's got a fire there. It could go out. Now, if it goes out, that would be inconvenient for people because once you can't eat your sacrificial meat. Let's say if you're a shlamim, if you're a murim, the parts of the shlamim have to go on the mizbeach haven't been offered. They can't be offered if the fire goes out. So that could delay things, but it never happened. So even though the fire was outdoors and it could rain heavily in Yerushalayim, but the fire's never extinguished and that was a miracle to itself. We have something similar you have in the story of Eliyahu Hanavi in his showdown on the Har Carmel, where he similarly sort of doused his altar with water and it still worked just fine. And similarly, by in the previous case with the flies, you have something similar with Elisha Hanavi, his protege, who never had flies coming to him, as is pointed out in the Gemara there in the Brachas Daf Yod. Next you have, V'lo natzcha haruach es amud ha'ashan. The wind never prevailed over the smoke coming off of that altar to scatter the smoke into people's eyes. The wind might have the smoke went up and sort of like in a pillar. Okay, it could be if the wind blew, it would like a palm tree swaying in the wind could go from side to side, and the pillar could go like from side to side, if you will. But if you're a Kohen and you're serving there, you know, let's say you're walking around to the four corners of the Mizbeach to put blood on the corners because you're doing a chatas offering, let's say, if the wind is blowing and the smoke is scattering and it's a very big fire, that could be very unpleasant. You ever been to a campfire? You know, you don't want to sit in the downwind of the campfire because the smoke gets in your eyes and it burns and it's terrible. So the point here is that miraculously it never happened. Never happened that you had smoky air in which a Kohen had to serve, which would be unpleasant for his eyes, his mouth, and throat, and so on. Just didn't happen. The smoke went straight up. Next you have, V'lo nimtza psul ba'omer uvishtei alechem uvalechem upon him. So this is really like, I'll call it number 7, but it's 7a, b, and c. These are three different things that were done in the Beis Hamikdash using flour. Each of them would be sort of inconvenient and undesirable for them to become invalidated, but it never happened. So let's go through each one in their own time. The first is the Omer. The Omer is a barley offering that is brought on the second day of Pesach. Sfiras Omer is the counting from that day until Shavuos. So what happens is the night before the second day, so that means the second night of the day after, the night after Leil HaSeder, if you will, they're gonna go and get the freshly ripening barley crop. They'll turn that into an Omer offering, and Omer will be offered as a mincha, and it will be matir, it'll permit the chadash, the new crops, for being consumed by people. Now, since the rule is it has to be done on the second day of Pesach, and it has to be done from wheat that was harvested, or barley, I should say, that was harvested the night before, so if something would happen, and all sorts of things could happen, it could be the Kohen could become invalid, the recipe could be invalid, it could be exposed to Tumah, could be taken out of the right location, things can go wrong. So if something goes wrong, now you're sort of stuck. You can't do an Omer because tomorrow won't be the second day of Pesach, and the night before has already passed, so you're stuck. But it never happened. Similarly, the Shtei Halechem weren't technically offered the Mizbeach as Menachos, but they were kind of like their loaves of bread made out of leavened wheat. They couldn't be on the Mizbeach because they were leavened. And they were waved with this like Shalmei Tzibur, with this communal shlamim that was on the day of Shavuos. So the Shtei Alechem, those two loaves that were waved there by the Mizbeach, they never became puzzle. If they would have, you wouldn't be able to make new loaves on Yom Tov. So therefore, you would have been stuck. But it never happened. It never happened. And the function of those, by the way, the Shtei Alechem would allow for the Chadash, the new crop, to be used in making menachos, not for human consumption, but rather for the Mizbeach's consumption, if you will. So to permit the new crop, you need to have the Shtei HaLechem. A third of all, you have the Lechem HaPanim. The Lechem HaPanim is the showbreads, as they're called, those 12 loaves that are put on the Shulchan in the Kodesh, the special kli, the vessel of the Beis HaMikdash, where the showbreads sat. They went on every Shabbos. Now, if you something went wrong with those showbreads, they became pus or something. So now you wouldn't be able to put on new loaves until next Shabbos because you can't bake breads on Shabbos. So you'd be stuck. And therefore, it would be sort of a sad story that you'd have an empty shulchan with no lechem upon him, which would be sad for all of us. But in fact, it actually never happened. Miracle number 8 was Omdim Tzafufim Umishtachavim Ravachim. When they stood in the temple courtyard, when everyone was assembled, let's say on the three pilgrimage festivals, or on, say, Yom Kippur, when everyone wanted to come, see what was going on. So the temple courtyard was packed. Everyone was Tzafuf. There was hardly a place to stand. You know, standing only at best, like squished together. But then there were times you had to sort of bow down. Let's say when they are on Yom Kippur, they're going to, the Kohen Gadol mentions the Shem Hashem Mufurash, so everyone wanted to bow down. They'd prostrate themselves. Prostration isn't just bowing down, I should point out, it's like lying on the ground with your hands spread out in front of you and your feet spread all the way out, so you need a lot of space. And miraculously, there was space for everyone to prostrate themselves, and more than that, Ravachim, with space enough that they could, you know, say their private supplications, prayers to Hashem, and the guys next to them wouldn't even hear. They hadn't that much space. So there was actually a miraculously plenty of space for everyone to bow down and prostrate in privacy and comfort in the basement, which notwithstanding the fact that prior to the need to bow down, the place was packed to the gills. Number 9 is Vlohizik Nachash V'akrav B'Yushalayim Ma'olam. It never happened that a scorpion or a snake injured someone in Yushalayim. It's a machlokus in the Rishonim if we're talking about injured or just killed. But the point is that the snakes and scorpions weren't a risk in Yerushalayim, even though, in fact, they typically are risks, but there was a special protection over there as a miracle that Hashem did for the people. And finally, v'lo amar adam l'chavero, no one ever said to their friend, tsarli hamakom sha'alin b'Yerushalayim, the place where I'm staying in Yerushalayim here, because of a lila regla, I'm, you know, coming to the pilgrimage, is too crowded for me. They don't have space for me. No one ever said that. Even though Yerushalayim is a relatively small place, and there could be lots and lots of Jews coming for Lila Regal, and everyone's packed in like sardines, so you might think there's no place for everybody. Wrong. This is like Eretz HaTzvi. Eretz Yisrael is like the land of the gazelle. The hide stretches. There was space for everyone, not just when they bowed down for that minute, but in general. When they stayed in Yerushalayim, they had ample space. They were comfortable. No one felt too crowded, which again is important for the ambiance and the sense of the royalty and majesty of coming to Yerushalayim and the joy of it. It's meant to be a joy, not just a spiritual joy, but a physical joy. And in fact, people were comfortable in their homes. So these 10 miracles were done for the Jewish people for their own sake as a benefit to them, and therefore they're memorialized here in our Mishnah. Again, so we should have sort of the Hakar Satov to Hashem before he did, remember those miracles, and anticipate their return as Hashem very soon.